At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back in Baltimore, and you know from prior years that it's one of my favorite trips, and I certainly did not want to, desire to have to start the week of coverage this way, but it's a responsibility, and there's been enough of these hard to discuss stories over the years. You face up to it, and I get everybody's widespread concern and consternation and outrage. I do. Everybody responds to things in different ways, but I think the one thing everybody would agree on is we all have a passion about this game, or for this game, and for this business at whatever level we're involved. And no one wants to see the, something that they're passionate about, negatively portrayed or given an impression of improprieties and unpleasantries. From that standpoint, we're all on the same page. We want what's best for the game, and that's why in recent years have taken to that mantle about being a good steward. Everyone has to be a good steward of the game, no matter what level you're involved. And people are always going to have self-interest and self-motivation, but you can't be selfish. The game's greater good comes first, always, always. And is it the Charlie Whittingham, right? It's Whittingham that said, one monkey don't stop no show. It the game is bigger than any, I say this repeatedly, the game is bigger than any one individual and any, one setback. Jack Sisterson joins us. Jack, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Certainly... Since you're the first guest, since somehow you ended up in this weighty responsibility in this chair, talk about your appreciation for the game and how you approach the business and it as your livelihood.
Well, first and foremost, Steve, there's so many things that go on behind the scenes, the amount of work and effort that the cot walkers and grooms, owners, farm staff, especially in my position that I work for Calumet Farm, they go unrecognized. And I think you would agree, as well as everybody listening, what we do for a living is because we have one thing in common, and that one thing in common is just passion for horses. If it wasn't for the horses, we wouldn't be here, and we put the horse's best interest at first. And I'm a firm believer in you take care of the horse. I can promise you one thing, that horse will take care of you. And we've had some lucky situations where, you know, we're a younger barn, we're new to the game, we don't know everything. We work as a team, and there's been in a few situations where we wake up 7 days a week at 3 o'clock in the morning with a smile on our face because we love what we do. Goes back to that saying, you take care of that horse, it will take care of you. And because of the horses, not us, they are taking care of us. And I don't know how to phrase it, but the horses don't get enough credit that they deserve, I think. And the people behind the scenes, that you know, the grooms and the hot walkers, and I suppose everybody saw that we got lucky there on Saturday, but it's not me. There's so many more people behind the scenes that do a lot more hard work than I do. This is a homebred that we had that won. Calumet owned the stallion, owned the mare, still does. There's Eddie Kane, the farm manager, that would be awake 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, full watch. You know, after I feed and leave the barn at 5 p.m., I sometimes call him and all I hear is a lawnmower in the background. He's mowing paddocks. So people don't see that, and it's rewarding when you see those type of guys doing all this hard work that don't get recognized. But there they are back in Lexington watching a horse that they've actually had longer than I've had go on to win a race like that. I'd like to dedicate that win to them because it's not me. It's a big team effort that, again, going back, we all share that one thing in common is the passion for the horse.
Yeah. To shift, I appreciate that, Jack. Thank you. And I kind of threw that at you without any warning. Frankly, we can literally channel that energy and that mindset into Channel Cat and the win on Saturday in the Man of War. And what a satisfying win this has got to be for you, him, Johnny, Calumet. This is a horse that has really stayed in good quality form for an extended period. You talk about, you know, getting him and what you've done with him.
Very little. I've done with him because it's
nice
to keep him happy. He came to me in great shape from Todd, and I think it just goes to show you how classy Todd is. He was one of the first text messages after when he won, congratulated me. And, you know, I started hot walking for Todd. You know, it's easy to be bitter if you don't get a horse back. And it wasn't, you know, Todd's doing that he never, it was just simply I have paddocks there at Keeneland that I'm allowed to train the horses and turn them out. And Channel Cat was one horse that seemed to thrive off that. And the farm thought it was a better environment keeping him home at Keeneland because he liked being allowed to turn out and allowed being a horse while kept in training. The win was special, Steve. Any win's special. I like, you know, going to Belterra Park and winning. One, because they've got good ice cream there on the drive back home, but it was gratifying. It's a homebred. I know the farm was watching, that I'm just, again, a tiny, tiny, tiny piece of a massive operation. And unfortunately, it's my name out there. The horse wins. There's a microphone put in my face. It's not me. It's we. It's the whole team and Channel Cat as well. And fortunately, I grew up in a sports environment and, you know, been under pressure quite a bit. And so I don't get nervous before a horse runs. And, you know, I get excited, but for some reason I was a bit nervous about Channel Cat running. I couldn't figure out why, and I was going through the form and couldn't really figure out. You know, I know the European horse of Chad's had European speed. European speed, I think everyone would agree, would be a lot different than American speed. So I was like, well, I know this horse is not going to jump and make the lead. So I'm going through the form and, you know, I'm trying to die, you know, field passes coming out of shorter distances, had some good rag numbers, and obviously he's probably jumping, going to go forward. And so I'm trying to diagnose. Channel Cat won the ball in green with Louis Size on the front end, but going a slower pace. And I finally figured out what was making me nervous. The name John Velasquez popped up. With his success, what he did last week, which is incredible, I just didn't want to be the person to let John Velasquez down. So that's why I was nervous. It wasn't Channel Cat. It was letting John Velasquez down because of his previous weekend winning the Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby. And I didn't tell John what to do. I'm not the type of guy that would. And he came out into the paddock and I congratulated from last weekend. And he told me, he said, Jack, you know, if I jump and he takes me and goes forward, I'm going to try and make the lead. And I said, don't let me get in your way, John. And give him a fist bump, a leg up, wished him good luck, and it seemed to work out well.
I can tell you that for horse players who, you know, going back to the Bowling Green success, that have been, you know, betting him and you know, rooting him, and that, frankly, that's his last win going back to July of 19. And not that he hadn't been, you know, competitive, and the thing is, he kept coming from off the pace, and Johnny had ridden him, actually, in the Fort Lauderdale, and he got beat as up in there, going back to the end of 19. You know, he had the majority of last year. He was basically on the shelf for, what, 7-8 months. But, you know, he turns in this effort back on the front end, and it's his, you know, it's his first triple-digit fig. He gets a 102 buyer and, you know, back up really among his best performances of his career. He's a six-year-old.
Well, and I don't think – I walked to myself yesterday at Belmont Park, and he wasn't acting like, you know, he was tired after the race. He was bright-eyed, energetic, you know, great color to his coat. We sort of have a time-consuming program back at Keenan to where we try and pay attention to little things. Because I believe, you know, if you take care of the little things, you know, those little things can become big things quick. It's pretty simple what we do. And we've got a great younger sort of staff. And, you know, we don't train them hard, Steve. I like the horses to put their feet where they want to put their feet, get them in that happy frame of mind, training-wise. I found that, you know, they come back to the barn after training a happier horse. You feed them. You see them dive straight into the feed tub. They relax. They rest. They wake up. They do it again. Oh, I wasn't forced to do anything. I'm happy. So once we can get those horses in that happy frame of mind, they might not be 100% fit. And I think if people, from a gambler's standpoint, I'd probably say don't ever bet one of our horses first time out or off a layoff, just because we try to find them, get them in that happy frame of mind, not push them hard. And once they can move along at their own progression instead of me forcing them. And that's just the way we've operated, and that's the way we'll always operate. And, you know, second off the layoff is a big angle. You know, Lexingtonian ran a great race last weekend. A lot of the betting public dismissed him. We knew he was only sort of 50% fit at Gulfstream, but the goal was the Churchill Downs. Kylie knew that. The barn knew that. It was a stepping stone to move forward, to get him fit for the Churchill Downs. So, and, you know, we pay attention to the feed program a lot because each horse is different. It's a bit like humans, you know. I tend to ask for seconds at times and be greedy, and, you know, my sisters might say, oh, I'm full after, and I'll say, can I finish that? And I sort of treat our barn that we have the same way. And once we leave the barn, Steve, at 5 o'clock p.m., we have a fantastic night watch that comes in. His name's Bill. And Bill says that, you know, he's asleep usually when these horses are running. And he congratulated me. That means the world to me. But at the same time, Bill takes a lot of credit for this because once we leave the barn at 5 o'clock, however many horses I have, which is quite a lot, they're in one person's hands. Well, come 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock a.m. when we start coming in, there's 50 people. So Bill's got a lot of pressure. And I asked Bill, you know, he gets a sheet printed out every evening for him, and he marks down everything that's happened. And he's probably thinking, Jack, this isn't, you know, I don't want to go back to school here. But he's bought into that. And there's so many times that he's written down, hey, you know, Channel Cat has been finishing his feed, you know, earlier than usual. You know, he's acting like he may need a bit more. Stuff like that, Steve, if this is what I'm getting at, that I don't know, I don't have eyes in the back of my head. I've got guys back there that are giving me information that ultimately are helping the horses. And, you know, we may have to bump up a certain horse's feed because that's what they want. But it's one guy at night that's giving me that information. And if it wasn't for that one guy, I possibly could have, you know, not got that horse, and that horse's happy frame of mind because he was hungry, so if that makes sense. Now, there's other horses that, you know, are not eating. I got to figure out why they're not eating. So we back off the feed until they start gradually, you know, getting the appetite back. Or just some horses don't want to be fed so much. So little things like that, Steve, that people don't see. And this is just a night watch that, you know, stays up all night. And he's a massive part of the team. And I got to give tons of people credit that for any horses I was winning because, you know, like Bill, the night watch there, he's a massive part of our program. And it might sound silly because he never steps foot on a track. He never once puts a bridle on or never once puts a set of bandages on. He's a simple night watch, but he's a massive, massive, massive asset to our barn.
Jack, that anecdote is going to get a lot of response because it absolutely touches on so many aspects of commitment to understanding and tailoring programs to, you know, to individual horses. And, you know, as you talked about the feed portion of it, easy to be reminded of the way Alan Jerkins, has famously talked about, you know, going back, in the quiet hours when the horses are resting, watch how they rest, you know, are some being hard on themselves and are they, you know, are they pacing the stall and stall walkers and so forth.
Exactly. Little things that I can't see. And, you know, I don't know. I'd be the first to admit when I can't do something, I could not be a night watch because he's got so much responsibility. But this guy has so much passion for it. Passion for staying awake at night, walking around at the wintertime, a freezing cold barn. I mean, that really, you know, God, it takes a lot. Again, it goes back to, you know what he does? He has a passion for the horse and he loves the horses, and that's why we're all here and that's why he loves what he does. And I couldn't do it without him, you know. I could have missed a lot of things if Bill never told me, hey, Channel Cat, hey, such and such, hey, this horse acts like, horses can't talk, but you can really feed off the body language, how they're acting, how they're feeling. Like you said, if they're laying down longer than usual, if they're up walking the box, so they act nervous, Bill writes everything down, gives it to us, and we take that information, construct it into a positive way, and try and figure out, hey, try feeding them a little half a scoop. See if that, try, guess what? Wow, that helped. And it's proven in the afternoons that some horses we feed a little extra, some horses we don't. But Bill, the night watch, you're obviously not, I know you're not listening because you're sleeping now.
He's asleep.
But, you know, I'm actually just finishing up at Bell and fly back, but I'll see him tonight when I get back to Keeneland. Then what I'm just trying to say, see, there's so many people, and I'll always offer it to soccer's a big passion, love of mine, and there's 11 guys on that team, and when somebody gets a red card, you know what, those odds drastically drop of winning. Well, if there's one team member that drops off, it's the same thing that we've got a great team, and when you win a race, that microphone's pointed in that one person's face, and it's unfortunate the 50 guys couldn't be standing next to Channel Cat there on Saturday because those guys did all the hard work.
And it's always well received when, you know, when outfits, trainers, and owners who are, you know, and jocks who are, you know, the faces of the success, when they single out and talk about, you know, the behind the scenes, because there's, you know, there's always, you know, so many along the way. And frankly, when you talk about a horse like this, who went over the $1 million mark with the win, I mean, you know, he frankly could have finished fifth and he would have gone over, he was at 998,000. But he becomes a millionaire, gets grade one black type, which you would imagine is going to go a long way to him, you know, potentially, you know, standing alongside his sire, English Channel at Calumet. This is a very big win for him. I mean, this is a horse that's been consistent for really his whole career, and occasionally it has misfired, but not too often. And so there's been so many different people that have had their hands on him, you know, from early on. And so to get to this point at age six, and I usually have these conversations, Jack, with Shug. It's usually a lot of horses in his care that you know, get their grade one, their first grade one at 6 years old.
I think it just goes back to Channel Cat's talent, passion, and will to win. That I couldn't really sleep Saturday even because I was just watching the replay. And if you really see, you know, at that age, pole, 16th pole, how that horse stuck his neck out. If you can't tell me that horse wanted to win, the will that he was showing, sticking his head out for that finish line to come, does that not tell you, one, the passion, the will, the talent, obviously. And again, if people say these horses don't love what they do, you watch Channel Cat's replay and you tell me, did he not love doing that? Because I promise you, if he didn't love what he was doing, he wouldn't have stuck his head out. He would have went completely backwards.
That's funny.
Usually
you know,
when people enjoy what they're doing,
yep,
you go forward in life. Am I correct in saying that?
It was obvious. And well, if people only saw the, you know, the race, you know, hit the wire and then maybe a quick replay, as they were hitting the wire, I saw what he was doing and how he was extended. It was quite remarkable, and I'm glad you mentioned it. It was amazing. His neck was not retracting on the bob. It was unbelievable.
And I know that we're all in this sport together, and there's a lot of negativity. You know, I try and not, I put my focus on the horses and that's it. But if someone would ever say to me, I don't think these horses enjoy what they do, you're kind of forcing them to do it. Take a look at Channel Cat's last 16th of a mile, and you tell me, at one point, was he not enjoying that? Because I promise you, if he wasn't enjoying doing that, he would have put his head up. Right in the end, he would have stopped. And that just goes to show you, these horses love what they do. And we're here for the horses. it's a great industry. We want to work together. Not only myself, my Barmbacher Keen, but with other trainers. If we can grow the sport together, which I know we can, because it goes back to we're all here because we have the passion for the horse. And we can. And it's doable. And, you know, I think just what I'm trying to say is if someone's going to ever argue with me saying, oh, these horses, if I'm going to jump on a plane today, fly back to Keeneland, and 99% of those people on the plane will not know horse racing. And I'm sure, like, you probably agree with me, Steve, that some people probably think we force these horses to run. They don't want to run. I'll pull the replay up of Channel Count. You tell me, is that a horse that does not want to? Come on. Like, if you could put a bubble up above Channel Cat, he'd be telling us, this is great. I'm loving this. He's going forward. And it's like us, you know, you do what you love. We do, we're all here. Life in general, if you do what you love, typically you move forward in life. And, you know, somebody once said to me, you know, forget about money. If you do what you love, money will come. And I think Channel Cat maybe thought, hey, I'm doing what I love. I'm about to become a millionaire here. The one problem Channel Cat has though now he's a millionaire, I'm going to have to borrow $100 from him. So he's got to share some of that.
What lies ahead? Similar grade one schedule as last year?
You know, we'll obviously bring him back home. He'll get turned out in his paddock there at Keeneland. We brought him back. I took all the blame for his disappointing run in the McKnight there. I was actually just breathing too fast in the grass at Palm Meadows. And he just ran flat that day. And Corey Lannery, again, he's a big, you know, attribute to his win there on Saturday. Because he rode him three times and loved him every time. He ran a very good race for us off the layoff in the Fort Lauderdale. He just said, Jack, he wasn't the same. In the McKnight, I sort of scratched my head all Sunday, Monday, dude. And I just knew I just was breathing him too fast. I gave him 2 weeks off. Backed off him completely, slowed his works right down, and he thrived off that. So Channel Cat's the horse that we sort of had to figure out, and we know how to move forward with him now. Brought him back in 3 weeks because, again, the licked the ball clean, he was putting on weight, his coat was great, he was showing the signs he wanted to come back that quick. We'll get him back home, and we'll definitely pencil in the Manhattan if we feel like it's coming back, you know, a bit quick after running them back nice. In 3 weeks in Alcorn. We might look at the United Nations and, you know, after that, possibly I'd love to say the Arlington Million, but the Mr. D, something like that. And then it'd be cool to go down to Kentucky Downs. You know, he won at Kentucky Downs when Todd had him. So he obviously showed that he had affinity for that configuration down there. And one, it's called the Calumet Cup. So it would be a great day out for the farm if Channel Cat can continue to move forward and have a live shot in a race like that for Calumet.
Nice schedule, and that would put you on the doorstep of another Breeders' Cup try.
It would, very much so. And even yesterday, I was half thinking, could Channel Cat go to Royal Ascot for the Prince of Wales? I said, Jack, don't get greedy now. Just keep him here. And I don't have a top hat, so I can't go to Ascot. So that's the problem there.
Yeah, you can rent them if if some of the characters I've seen in the morning jackets and hats, they can pull it off. You can pull it off. We'll set you up with Nick Luck. He'll bring you to his he'll bring you to Savile Row
actually, I might shoot Nick a text. And I'm sure he's got one I can borrow as well.
Absolutely.
This is fun. Happy to have Jack Sisterson with us and talking about Channel Cats grade one win. And, you know, Calumet obviously having a really fun season. And, you know, a lot of times the horses will show up in spots and, you know, we go back to Bourbonnick in the wood and, you know, everybody knows that, they'd like to run in the high profile spots, but the reality is the success has accompanied the policy, frankly. And I also sense, Jack, that, you know, with you and the other, you know, any of the other trainers that have got horses and have had horses from Calumet in recent years, Dale Romans and Rusty Arnold and you know, they've really done a nice job spreading horses around. It feels like everybody, you know, kind of has, you know, has a real point of pride to be training for Calumet.
Very much so, Steve, because, you know, I'm new to sort of the game and, you know, I would say that we are competing against the likes of, you know, Chad Brown's got the 8-5 favourite there, and Christoph Clement. You come to New York, you're sort of slightly intimidated by the, you pick up the programme, the names, and, you know, a big, I wouldn't be here. One, obviously, Eddie Kane, the farm manager, and I, you know, dedicate Channel Cats win there to Eddie, but for Doug O'Neill, my old boss, he taught me so much, and he's always, you know, every race he watches, and he's there if I ever have any questions. And yeah, the amount of texts I got Saturday after the race, and but all these other Calumet trainers that want Calumet to win. Obviously, I mentioned Todd had texted me. Todd didn't have to text me after that race. Steve Asmussen texted me. You can think of how many horses Steve Asmussen has all over the country. And probably as he's typing that text out, he's probably got 3 horses in Sam Houston and 4 at Churchill. But he's taking his time out to text me, and I'm nobody. It just goes to show you, from an outside person, they don't see that. The public don't see how supportive other trainers are amongst each other, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Calumet obviously employ quite a few trainers, and it's great that, you know, there's no jealousy. It's all support, Steve, and
yeah,
this is great for the sport, and this is the way. I'm a very firm believer we can get this, you know, we could take it to a whole new level, because I know we can all work together and support each other. And yes, we're all competitors and we all want to win, and unfortunately, there's only one winner, unless there's a dead heat. But it's great, you know, you get beat and all these guys, hey, congratulations, that was great. And so it's, again, thanks to all the text messages I got from trainers that I just wake up every morning and strive to be liked. And they're texting me saying congratulations. Usually it's either me, you know, I barely win. And these guys text, wow, that's... So, a lot of class to those guys that taking the time and showing support. And it means a lot for somebody young starting off that you're getting texts from people like that congratulating you. Yeah, Rusty Arnold's been great with me. You know, all these guys back at Keenan, they've been there for years, that you walk into the track kitchen and the first thing, all of the pictures of Rusty Shug up on the wall, and you say, God, how do I get my picture up there? And, you know, it makes you want to work that much harder when you've got guys like that texting you, congratulating you. And I always thought the only way I could get my picture up on the wall is sneak in there one day and stick it up there myself.
Maybe nobody will notice. I love it. Now, you know, that should be noted, Jack, that I brought up the Chick Lang win before you joined us. And you know, this, since that Chick Lang win, you've had 3
Grade One wins. You know, True Timber with the Cigar Mile, Vexatious won the Personal Ensign, and now this Man of War wins. So your last three Grade One wins. We brought up Lexingtonian, and go back to last week, actually, and you mentioned that he, you know, he has been a horse that I think some people find, you know, readily goes in and out of form. Talk about last week in the Churchill Downs. I mean, that was some crazy finish.
Very fun day. I didn't stay the whole day there at Churchill. It was a busy, you know, day back at the Barnet Keeneland, so I couldn't spend too much time away. But it's actually funny you mentioned Lexingtonian. You know, I was at Belmont, went to the small track kitchen there and sat down and, you know, I was having a cup of tea there, and Jose Ortiz walked in and said good morning, sat down next to me. He said, God, Lexingtonian, he rode Lexingtonian when he won the Chick Line. I thought to myself, he's a guy that's won so many Grade Ones and will continue to win all these Grade Ones all around the country, world. And he brings up Lexingtonian, that he won a little small race, that, and he just, you know, congratulated me on his good effort, that he knows the horse because he's ridden him. He's such a fighter that, you know, if you watch his replays, he's never going to be a horse that's going to win by 10 lengths. He almost likes to be headed at the top of the lane because he shows so much will. Drawn 13 wasn't the ideal post, but the way I look at it, if it wasn't us drawn 13, it was going to be somebody else, so we took it. And, again, Tyler didn't tell Tyler what to do. He knows him, and he said, Jack, he's got natural speed. If he jumps and goes forward, I will. And, you know, he's 5 or 6 wide going down the backside, you know, isn't great, but Tyler rode him great. Didn't want to take anything away from him. And again, at the top of the lane, he looked at speed, but he shows will and heart to sort of, again, if you watch his replay, fortunately, he didn't win, but he does stick his neck out and wants to do it, and came back to the barn as this proud as can be. And he's a horse that you have to be proud of, because every time he shows up, he's 20-1, 30-1, 45-1 last week. And, you know, his form's a bit inconsistent due to me, my fault. But hopefully we can manage him this year and get that ultimate Grade One, because a horse like that that's on a spike stand, that's got natural speed, I think, you know, from a breeding standpoint, we are in the US, and predominantly US racing is based on speed. I think a lot of people would agree with that, and obviously spike stand is such a successful stallion. Having a son of spike stand that's good looking and has speed, you'd have to think when he does win a Grade One, he'd be a good addition to the Calumet stallion roster.
Well, and plus, you fold in that damn Riviera Romper, Tappet mare. This is a homebred, and it's a nice page. The problem with him has been, Jack, that he's got to get a breakthrough performance. It's funny because the Chick Lang win, he won the Listed Stake at Laurel. He obviously likes it at Churchill. They had the allowance win, and then, you know, comes that close to winning the Churchill Downs. He probably needs a breakthrough triple digit fig in the right, you know, in the right place. And even if it comes, I suppose, the True North, you're looking at the True North maybe for...
No, if you see him run at Belmont that day, it would be the Met Mile if he was to come up here.
Ooh, look at you. I was going to ask you about distance. What is your feeling with him on trip?
It's a great point, you know, and I was speaking to the guys back at the farm that, yeah, he's such a grinder, and, you know, he got beat ahead there in the Bing Crosby going 6, and a lot of people said, well, it set up for him. But that wasn't as, you know, because you show how he shows everyone how much natural early speed he's got. So he's not a horse, he's not a late running sprinter. But at the same time, he can be, because he showed that. And I only ran him once at Arlington when I was trying to figure out, and I mismanaged him, his 3-year-old career, because I never tread him as a dirt sprinter. GC, I ran him, Churchill, then he went to Pimlico. And I don't have his form in front of me. Did I go to Arlington and ran him in a little listed race there, going a one-turn mile? And then I ran him in Kentucky Downs, 6.5, and didn't give him the chance to really prove that, hey, I won the sprint on the dirt. But this last race, Steve, you know, it was unfortunate he was wide. Credit to Flagstaff winning. Whitmore ran a great race. And we just didn't get the best to sort of, it wasn't a close, it wasn't a photo finish. But you look, just a slight jump after the wire. He's in front. The thing that I loved about it was, if you go back and watch his replay, his ears come straight up in the end, prick forward. That to me shows me a sign of a happy horse that might want to, you know, that was seven fast fractions. Hey, you know what, an extra 8th of a mile might not be out of the question for him. You never know it until you try it, and then you take on a different, I mean, the Met Mile, you take it on sprinters stepping up, you take it on classic tights come dropping down in trip. It's a very prestigious race. It would, again, I'll put it in Mexitonian's hands. He's came out the race in great shape. Like I said, if he would have come to Belmont, it would be for the Met Mile, not the True North. Or we might just keep him at home and look for another spot. He's run well off a 2-month layoff. Either go to the Vosburg at Saratoga or back out to Delmar for the Bing Crosby with him, if we decide not to do the Met Mile and we get a little prep into him before the Vosburg or the Bing Crosby.
I'm all for taking the chance. I mean, it's right out of the Calumet playbook to run him in the Met Mile. And that performance at, you mentioned the at Arlington and also at Laurel 7/8, but that dam that Graham Motion trained for Len Riggio. And she herself is out of Swap Flipperoo, and she won going the one-turn mile. She only won once in 7 tries, and she won at Laurel going the one-turn mile. So there's some aptitude for it. It might be the clever maneuver, and
Steve, certainly you're twisting my arm here.
I like it. All right, Lexingtonian. I remember. I'm at Pimlico. I'm coming to you from Pimlico, and I remember standing there in the winner's circle watching him, and it crushed my tickets. And I looked at you, and nice job, you. And you strode out there to the apron, and like you fully expected the Lexingtonian that day. He was, you know, he was the longest shot on the board last Saturday. I didn't realize that 46-1.
Yeah, it was. That was actually the first time he hasn't won for us second off a layoff. Again, an angle of ours, you know, we ran him at Churchill, Kentucky Derby there, 3 years ago. And it was when, you know, Hidden Scroll was, you know, cutting back and it was a tough allowance race that he ran, and he ran a deceptively good race. You look, a better race on paper, and I thought, you know, this horse ran, he's fifth or sixth, but I was very optimistic about the way he ran, watching the replay. So we brought him back and just monitored his energy level back in the barn. And Steve, it was 2 weeks. I mean, it was 9 or 10 days after. I called the farm and said, this horse is jumping out of his skin. I know it might be ambitious, but there's a grade 3-year-old stick at Pimlico. Would you mind if we stick him on a van and give him a shot in that? And I think, Steve, you know the answer, what I got straight away when I asked, can I take a shot? And I got a big thumbs up, and it was Lexingtonian who put himself in that spot, because he showed us that he wanted to run again, and it worked out. So he's a horse that really puts, you know, 100% into his efforts when he shows up. So fingers crossed we can get that ultimate grade one with him this year.
talking about Lexingtonian, coming out of Churchill last week with Jack Sisterson, and grade one win for Channel Cat. Jack, before I let you go, I got to ask you about two starters this week, one at Churchill and one at Belmont. And let's start with the first-time starter, and this is a $150,000 Freud, a New York bred that actually that SF Bloodstock crafted out of the Thunder Gulch mare Tiffany Twisted. This is Anejo, A-N-E-J-O, Louis Saez rides. And I tell you, I like the nice, even set of works.
Yeah, you know, he's a big, beautiful horse, as everyone will see in the paddock there at Belmont. He's just such a big two-year-old, Steve, that we had to do what's right by him and let him really mature into his frame, because I didn't want to push on him and, you know, something jeopardize his career moving forward. So we give him time as a two-year-old, not for any, you know, injuries or setbacks, just from a natural standpoint. He was such a big horse that he needed to grow up. And I've been surprised at how big he is, but how much speed he's been shown in the morning, because we don't breeze them fast at all. But he's doing that on his own, and we weren't specifically looking for a grass race for him. We could have ran him on the dirt, but the only thing there with Saturday, Steve, is you look at our stats, we don't win first time out. So just the way we train, and I'm not going to change that. He will get better with a run under his belt, and probably further than how big and sculpy he is. But at the same time, it wouldn't shock me if he won Thursday either. So he's a nice horse to move forward and look forward to possibly running in some of those New York bred races in Saratoga midsummer with.
That 59 and change gate work, that's a big tell on April 30th.
I actually put him with a multiple winner, an older horse that actually won the Arlington Futurity, a horse called Flapjack.
We love Flapjack.
Yeah, and to sort of help him out the gate a bit. And Flapjack, I'm not going to lie, was slightly better that day, but understandably so. You know, he's an older horse that,
sure,
you know, has somewhat of a decent enough sort of resume, but he held his own in some decent enough competition there. So we'll be looking forward to getting him going Thursday.
Let's bring up the other starter, and this is Anejo that I just mentioned with Jack that runs at Churchill in the sixth on Thursday, I think, right? No, Friday.
Thursday or Friday? Thursday at Belmont, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Thursday at Belmont, Friday at Churchill is the Calumet Homebred Full Charge.
Where do I start? You know, we ran him at Gulfstream first time, three quarters, just to get a run into him. And if you watch his replay, I mean, he didn't. If you sort of switch the race off at the finish line, you wouldn't see his gallop out. And we all knew going into it, Corey knew, you know, I said, just keep him galloping out, because I think once we stretch him out, you'll see his best running. And we stretch him out and ran a decent third there at Keene. And I think Todd won the race, and Danny Gargan was second with two decent enough type of horses. And, you know, we were plugging away third. Steve, I'm not going to tell you he's going to win on Friday. I don't want to lie to you. You know, we'll be optimistic. He's definitely going to he'll be staying on at the finish. You know, he's a horse that doesn't possess a lot of speed. You know, we added blinkers trying to get him into the race that little bit earlier, so he's not having so much to do late, because he wouldn't have a big turn of foot. So Adam's riding him back, and, you know, we look for Adam to try and bounce out and get a forward early position so he doesn't find himself doing too much late.
Well, and I just scrolled through this field. This is a serious group of three-year-olds going a mile and a 16th, and I mean, they come out of some serious races, including Stage Raider's maiden win. Stage Raider, you mentioned the horse of Todd's. That was Ghazali that won that that spot, and American Law in here that was between you and Ghazali. Southern District, I know that Seth Klarman they've got real expectation for Southern District too in here. He's going to move to the dirt for the first time. Michael Tomlinson in here with a good debuter out of the Stage Raider race. So this thing, just a 7-horse field, but I tell you, this looks like a 6-horse field, but this looks like a serious group.
Yeah, it's short but competitive. Someone could have given me a heads up there, but anyway, like you said, we don't mind taking a shot.
I love it. Jack Sisterson's been with us. And Jack, before we go, I got Kelly Breen coming next, but I did want to ask about the horse that won down in Florida, that won the stake, won the Dania Beach, Kentucky Pharaoh. What's going on there?
Yeah, lovely little horse, Steve. You know, obviously his first two races on the dirt, you know, we had to give him a shot in the dirt. One was the grass race and been cancelled there at Churchill towards the end of the meet. We couldn't get him on the turf quicker than we wanted. He held some decent form in his two dirt race. I think Kettle River beat him the 1/10 mile there at Churchill when he won. So obviously I know Brad had texted Brad before the race, and he was very high on Kettle River going into it. So I decided to try and get a gauge on when we do run the competition, so you know where to place them next time. And so we got him down to Palm Meadows, and he did a breeze on the grass. And after that breeze, you could tell he was a grass horse, and he won very well with Julian Broker's maid. And he showed signs that he wanted to come back into Virginia Beach and won that well.
Very nice. And are you? I can't recall from the last couple of summers. Have you availed yourself of that, the ship and win concept?
You know, David Jerkins has been great to me. I love Delmar. David Jerkins is such a great guy to work with. We've always discussed, but we've never actually been stabled out there. We probably will send a few more horses out there this summer due to the fact that the Breeders' Cup's there, and, you know,
right,
we can be somewhat successful and get a winner to over the track where the Breeders' Cup, you know, is held at this year. It made a bit of sense business-wise to give it a shot at Del Mar this year. So hopefully we have a little presence out there and get a win or two while we're there.
Nice. Well, and finally, before Kelly joins us, what's the ice cream joint when you leave Belterra? Where do you go?
It's actually just right there. As you leave in the paddock, it's just in the grandstand on the left.
Oh, really? In the track, you mean? Oh, wow.
Yeah, every time. And they're like, are you back here again? Don't tell anyone. Yeah, can I get two? Yeah, throw an extra scoop on there.
I love it. All right, good job. Great. So we get a push on Belterra ice cream at Belterra. I thought you were going to mention something, you know, out there on Eastern Parkway or, you know, in Cincinnati somewhere. But
no, I just get there, and but then I probably come back to Lexington and stop off at Crank and Boone before I go home.
Oh yeah,
and get another ice cream. So I don't have a healthy lifestyle when I go to Belterra.
I love it. And, you know, with Jack mentioning Belterra, and because we're going to have Kelly Breen join us here momentarily, I do want to mention one thing. There is today, in today's racing up at Thistledown, speaking of Ohio, you've got the Mike Rowland Memorial today that goes as the 7th, and certainly every year make a point of noting Mike Rowland, who was killed on track, of course, and you know, one of the sad realities. And actually, since I mentioned this, let me also mention you've got to be stabled there, Eric Reed, I imagine, at Lexington, and one of Eric's exercise riders, and lost his son the other day in Peru. Was killed, 27-year-old and a successful rider, Juan Eugenio Enriquez. And when I saw the Mike Rowland, I sort of had mentally noted that I saw Eric Reed make that notice on Facebook. And so hearts go out to the Enriquez's. And in fact, Juan Enriquez came to the U.S. and rode just a little bit. I know he was, I remember when, you know, there was notice that he was going to try to start a career here, and then ended up back in Peru, and was killed at Monte Rico over the weekend. So thoughts to them and the Mike Rowland today. Jack, thanks so much. This was tremendous.
Steve, always a pleasure to speak to you. Have a great day. And tell Kelly I said hi when you speak to him there.
In fact, he might be on the line. Kelly, you there?
Can you hear me?
There he is. Jack Sisterson wanted to say hello to you.
Oh, hey.
Hey, how are you, Jack?
Yeah, great, thanks. Good. So I'm going to shoot off you guys, so I'm not boring you guys to death as well. But thanks for having me, Steve.
Take care, Jack.
Okay, tremendous. Jack Sisterson, everybody. And turn right around after a really fun meeting with Jack here. This was went way longer than I expected. But you can follow Jack on Twitter. And Jack made himself a whole bunch of fans. KJB, Kelly John Breen joins us. And he's already got a hat load of fans. Maybe because you wear a hat.
I got a couple.
I have not seen you, didn't see you all winter, haven't talked to you, and I knew as I watched Firenze Fire storm to another stake win on Saturday that we would convene. And he is, you know, you got him under trying circumstances, obviously, but he has been so consistent and hard-trying, it's got to be a pleasure to lead him over.
Yeah, he really is a nice horse. I did not get to know him when we first started training him because he was with my assistant, John Atfield, and with the quarantines and the travel restrictions, I didn't see him for the first, like, 2.5 months. And when I finally got to lay eyes on him, I said, yeah, he's a good-looking horse. And then when he came down to Florida, we spent time with him, and we spoiled the crap out of him every day. His R&R time that he had, even though it was just in the stall at Palmetto's and taking it easy with him, he loved it. He actually was a very bright spot of my every morning because with all the treats that we gave him, he was standing there at the front of the stall and just happy to be down in the warm weather and to be spoiled. It was really neat to get to be so close with a horse.
He's now six, and obviously for Ron Lombardi, it's got to be a lot of fun. I mean, he's got a borderline. I suppose if he was by a higher profile stallion, he would have gotten offers. In the meantime, for him to keep maintaining this performance level, you won the True North with him last summer, won the Vosburgh, which, it's too bad that it's down a tick to a grade two. Now you fold in this win. I think people probably forget, Kelly, that he was third in the Breeders' Cup sprint behind Whitmore and CZ Rocket. He certainly shows no sign of any wear and tear.
No, Ron has had a couple of different offers, some to go out of the country, and he himself likes to race. And he made the decision to race him again this year. He says if he's healthy enough, we did freshen him up, and he appears from that race that the freshening him up did him well. And he really, he finally laid down about 9 o'clock last night because, just like if we were playing a sport, the horse himself was at the front of the stall, just stuck up against the webbing and just happy to be there and was so proud of himself. I was there yesterday morning, and he watched every horse walk by just to let him know hey guys, I still got it. You know, kind of funny.
That I love that. He, you know, recorded a 102 buyer, which is pretty much his norm. I mean, he's had higher, you know, the 101 in the Vaz last fall, and you know, comes back and starts the season with a 102. It bodes well, Kelly. And you know, one thing, as you say, you're getting to know him. Do you get a sense for his best distance at this point in his career?
You know, the way that he runs the other day, maybe 7/8. I don't know. Maybe it's 6 furlongs. He did look a little bit more muscular or heavier. I think a couple of people talked about it in the paddock, and I think we can get some of that weight off of him. But he's generally a muscular horse, and maybe that limits him. By eye to a, you know, stretching him out would be maybe a one turn mile, but he is very good right now, and I'm just ecstatic to see what we can do with him this year.
Are you saying that Maggie called him fat?
I know I was told that Mr. Migliori had called him that, where he didn't like him as a pick for the race, even though he was the favorite. But just as a eyeballing him when he was in the paddock and the rider was on him, I said he's a hefty horse. You know, I think I made the comment to Dave Grinning after the race. I said, you know, you get a little older, we all put a little bit of pounds on. You know, but he did look. He's so picturesque right now. He is a good looking stud.
Well, I got to ask, because I just had, you know, you talked to Jack Sisterson, and Jack slightly surprised me with Lexingtonian pointing for the Met Mile. It's 4 weeks out. Are you entertaining Met Mile thoughts?
I wouldn't think so. I'll have to talk to Ron, but, you know, the 6.5 furlongs coming back in 4 weeks probably is ideal for, I don't know if it's 4 weeks, 3 weeks. To see if we're going to run on the undercard of the Belmont. And the horse will also tell us. You know, I take a lot of time talking with Ron as to what we think. I'm trying to go through my bag right now looking for the stakes catalog, but I'm not going to be able to get it by the time I do find it, because it's probably packed away down in the bottom of my bag. But,
well, you're talking the True North, you mean, or
the True North, the 6.5, probably is more ideal going by timing. But when he gets back to the track, I'll talk to Ron about it, and we'll come up with a plan from there. But the way that he looked yesterday, I stayed overnight up at Belmont. I'm in New Jersey today, but the way that he looked and the way that he handled himself, that might be a perfect spot.
Makes sense. And there'll be plenty of, you know, summer sprint opportunities for maybe for a grade one like the Vanderbilt, which he did try last year. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, he got beat. Imperial Hint beat him. I'd forgotten that. And, of course, last week the hearts went out to the Mamones with Ray passing. And Louis Carvajal letting everybody know, and I'm sure, Kelly, you must have come across Mr. Mamone over the years at Monmouth.
Yes, I think he was with Bob Durso.
Absolutely.
It's sad to see. The only thing that, as a horseman, I'm glad that he had a horse like Imperial Hint, because everybody deserves to have, you know, it's in our business, they need a big horse, and it's great that he had that opportunity, so... he's got that feather in his cap. You can't take it away from him. And I'm sure that he got a chance to enjoy racing. For some of these people that are in racing for 40 years, 50 years, he had that horse that can bring him to travel the country and to stick your chest out. And it's nice. Everybody's, I wish it on everybody. You know, just, hey, listen, that little guy over there in the corner that's got two or three horses that's been around, let him have a good horse. You know, the feeling is, you know, it goes up there with the with the birth of kids, you know, I can't even describe some of the feelings that I have.
Well, you've had your share, and they keep coming along, and you've done a nice job already in the past calendar year with Mr. Amore, Ron Lombardi, and the other owners, including let's fold in. People may not have noticed. I think the focus was on Belmont Saturday, but down at Gulfstream, you won the English Channel with Yes This Time, a Not This Time colt for Edge Racing.
Yeah, I mean, he's a totally different look of a horse, where you have this big beast of a horse with Frenzy Fire, and then you got fiery chestnut colt that he doesn't know he's little. You know, you go from one extreme to the other, and the exercise rider is a small guy, and he says, "This guy doesn't know he's small. Don't tell him anything because he thinks he's the big horse." So it's fun and another nice race. I mean, pretty good performance. Circled the field, lost all the ground, didn't break well. Couldn't be more proud than of this little guy.
Well, and how did, you know, I don't have the PPs in front of me. I printed out the chart, because I noticed, you know, that you had won the other, you know, in addition to the stake in New York. How did they get their hands? Did they claim him?
It was a personal, private
sale. Wow.
With this new group that, they are a new group that I don't know all of the, Joe Morgan is in charge, and he—I guess it's a side deal. He was related with MyRacehorse.com, but it's not MicroShares. I think they're selling.
Right.
I don't know the whole deal. I think it's a 10% share, and they went out and they purchased this horse and asked me to train it. And we're 4-for-5 with them, and the horse just keeps on winning. And he's another different style of horse, but a nice horse to be around. And just, I hope it's not just Gulfstream Park, because that was part of the theory of keeping him there and not shipping him up north this early. He appears to like the track down there. I said, well, if we're going to give him a shot at a stakes race, why not do it where he's been successful? And
well,
the plan worked out.
How about that? What a nice story that is. Good for them. I love it. Well, what about, I want to ask you about Jersey, but let me also give everybody potentially a push. Belmont this week on Thursday. In fact, Jack has a horse in the same day. This is a maiden special going the one turn mile, and the fourth race on Thursday. Exalted Charm for Manhattan Racing. This is an anchor down colt that seems to be steadily improving with each start.
He's just been green. I don't want to say I've been a little disappointed in the horse, because he doesn't put his performance of a quote-unquote morning glory. He's not putting the morning workouts into the afternoon. Last race, he makes the lead in a sloppy track, and he jumped a couple of the tractor tracks when he's going from the main track, from the chute going a mile, and he went way too fast, different things. I think he's a nice horse. I think he needs to grow up. We did try putting blinkers on him in the past of trying to make him grow up. And he's a long striding, nice sized colt that he's been a little bit of sidetracked in his mental capacity, and I got to keep my fingers crossed that he's going to put it together one day.
Well, he's gone from a 42 buyer, 53 buyer, 60 buyer, and he's got something that I love when looking for a price. He suddenly, after not having much speed in his early races, he showed that speed
in the race at Aqueduct at the end of March. And this horse has also found himself in some impossible spots. He debuted in the Prevalence Stage Raider Gazali race at Gulfstream. Holy cow.
Yeah, and he didn't break in that race. To put everything that you try to do as a trainer, you tell the owner that he's doing good and last workout and all of the good things, and that he's breaking great, and then he doesn't show up. That's the epitome of what a horse trainer goes through every day. Of saying, man, we'll send the guy a video of him popping out of the gate. He came out with three others, and he's in front. And then when the race comes, they dwelt or whatever. That's what this horse has been to me so far. So I can't wait for him to put it all together.
Well, this is Exalted Charm, and he obviously has a hint of talent. So Eric Cancel gets aboard on Thursday. Kelly, before we go, we've got about a minute and a half, and obviously you're not going to flesh the whole situation out. But as one of the principal horsemen at Monmouth for years, what's your read on this, on the jockey stick situation?
Well, my first thing is just disappointment. It's really the way that the commission laid down the law, no confrontation with any horseman, jockey. I feel like it was a sham. You know, it was just the wool was pulled over everybody's eyes. I'm not sure where it came from or how it came from. I'm sure jockeys should be more educated on how to whip, what to whip, when to whip. But it wasn't a long time ago when they were told, you have to try your ass off to finish in the top four because we have superfecta betting now. Hmm. And then they're going to tell you 2 years later, 3 years later, but you can't whip them. We want you, for the better, to try all that you can and try through the wire, but now you can't whip them. It's
a mixed message. Mixed message.
Oh, my God. I'm biting my tongue. I really am, because it really doesn't make any sense. Throughout the country, it's a billions between being bet and the owners putting up their money to support, breed, race, own, train people that work in the industry. Boy, it's really tough to see what happens to Monmouth Park. People don't bet on the non-whipping races, and you can see a lot of people, whether they're not going to come to Monmouth, not going to bet on Monmouth, it's bad. I'm not a fan of it. I think that they have to realize it's a business, and if it's one horse, two horses, three horses, we're looking for the best performance out of our horse.
Exactly.
The better your performance, the more money you make. You know, the higher up in position, 60% goes to the winner. And I like 60%. Sounds a lot better than 5%.
I love it. Kelly, I got to pull up. I appreciate that, and we'll follow up on it. Good luck.
Okay, take care.
I appreciate it. Kelly John Breen, if you're not following Kelly on Twitter, you should be. And, of course, Jack Sisterson earlier. Thanks to Matt Hegarty as well, and Alan Foreman and Andy Beyer. Back to Pimlico tomorrow. Good luck, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.